The March of Time. Tonight, Remington Rand, world's largest manufacturer of office equipment, again takes pleasure in asking the men they consider to be the ablest historians of our day, the editors of Time, the weekly news magazine, to present their reenactment of memorable events from the news of the world. From the March of Time. Rome, Italy. With Air Sergeant Bruno Mussolini, 17, Air Second Lieutenant Vittorio Mussolini, 18, and Air Captain Count Nobiliciano, son-in-law of Il Duce, all now on their way to Ethiopia, and with Benito Mussolini himself commanding an army of 180,000 in the Alps, there comes from Rome a report of a farewell visit paid to Il Duce just before his departure by still another warlike Mussolini.
A minute, Romano. March. Where are you going?
March. Right into Papa's office. March. March.
Well...
March. March. March.
All right.
It's me, Romano. March. 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 March.
Who the hell are you?
March.
What are you up to now?
Saluto. I'm a soldier. Hail Il Duce!
Bravo! Real fascist salute.
With a sword. You haven't it on right. Yeah, like this. That's better. Yeah.
I want to be a captain in your army. I want to help you fight those Ethiopians.
In a few years, my son.
But I'm 8 years old already. All the men in our family are going. Bruno and Vittorio are going to fly airplanes. And Edda's husband, too. But I'd be willing to just be a foot soldier.
Well, we need foot soldiers too, Romano.
Look, Papa, I know how to give orders to soldiers too, the way you do. Soldiers of Italy, forward to Ethiopia. Courage! The arm of Italy must crush out slavery in a barbaric country. How's that?
Bravo, my son.
Then will you make me a real captain?
Well, when I get back from Bolzano, we'll talk it over, eh?
That'll be fine. Now I guess I'd better go back and drill my own soldiers. March! 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 March!
March! With Mussolini's departure for Bolzano, Romano was left in Rome as the sole male member of the Mussolini family. Parading about the Palazzo Venezio in his uniform of the fascist son of the Roman wolf, hoping that the war, which has already called all Italian men up to the birth year class of 1914, will last long enough for his class of birth year 1927 to be called. Time marches on. Washington, D.C.
The gentleman doesn't need an answer if he'd rather not, because I'm now declaring the House of Representatives of the United States adjourned sine die.
Thus, merrily to the end, early this morning, goes the House. But in the Senate, on and on after midnight, Senator Huey P. Long keeps the wearied homesick senators in session as he filibusters for a cotton loan rider to the third deficiency bill.
The House refused to allow its members to vote on relief for the poor cotton farmers. Those 435 dumbbells in the House are stampeding and running us out of Washington. Cotton farmers have been deprived of their rights. That's the issue tonight.
You alone are attempting to defeat the Social Security Appropriation Bill, a bill carrying benefits for crippled children. Will you take the responsibility?
Never mind that. When I go up the door of a humble cotton farmer, he's going to say to me, "How do you do? You're the man who stood in the Senate and fought our battles. I'm preventing the Senate from going home. I don't want to go home. I haven't any place to go."
Would the able senator from Louisiana
Like to have some of the senators tell him where they'd like to have him go?
All right. All right. This may be my swan song. I'm in an election year. If I'm going to be beaten, this is the issue I want to be beaten on. I yield to the senator from Washington.
My parliamentary inquiry, Mr. President, is whether the senator from Louisiana by this filibuster because of his selfish desire.
The Senate of the United States stands adjourned sine die.
Thus, as it must to all sessions of Congress, adjournment comes to the first of the 74th Congress. New Deal defeats.
One. The third deficiency bill with funds for Social Security affecting 25 million workers is killed by Huey Long's filibuster. Two. Restoration of the Spanish-American War pension benefits. Three. Rejection of the World Court.
New Deal victories in the second New Deal Congress.
The compromise death sentence for utility holding companies. The $250 million tax, the wealth bill. The banking bill of 1935, giving federal control over money and credit. New farm mortgage moratorium legislation. Legal safeguards for the 59-cent dollar.
The cost.
$1 billion for national defense. $1 billion authorized for congressmen's pet home projects, rivers, harbors, and flood control. $3 billion for the regular governmental running expenses. And $4.88 billion for work relief. The largest single appropriation of any legislative body in the world's history. A presidential veto stopped the expenditure of $2.2 billion for soldiers' bonus. But the amount appropriated by the 74th Congress totaled nearly $10 billion. Largest peacetime appropriation in U.S. history.
Time marches on. Minneapolis, Minnesota. To Dr. J. William Bufka, physicist of the University of Minnesota, comes an emergency phone call.
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Bufka?
Speaking.
This is Dr. Moe at Moe Hospital in Sioux Falls. We're in a jam over here. We've lost a vial of radium, and we finally come to the conclusion it was thrown out with the trash. I know it's an unusual request, but we thought maybe you fellas could rig up some sort of detector.
You mean you want me to come to Sioux City?
Yes. We're pretty sure it's in a rubbish heap on a farm near Sioux Falls. But we haven't any equipment.
Well, Dr. Moe, I don't know what kind of a detector would locate that pinpoint of radium in a mountain of rubbish, but we'll see what we can do.
Physicist Bukta hastily constructs a large cylindrical machine, takes the next train with his friend, chemist Hervey H. Barber, to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, 200 miles away. There they find the hospital's rubbish heap on a farm run by doleful F.L. Tibbles. Set up their improvised detector.
Mr. Tibbles, where was this morning's load dumped?
All over there, but there's no telling which is the hospital.
Let's try this side right here first, Dr. Barber.
So what's that contraption?
That's a radium detector, Mr. Tibbles.
Looks like an ash can.
So it is, Mr. Tibbles. But it's also a radium detector. See those sheets of gold leaf attached to the rod inside?
Yeah.
Well, the gold leaf is standing out from the rod now. When there's radium nearby, the leaves collapse. If we're cold, they're up. Hot, they're down. See? Now watch. You may see it work in a few minutes.
Well, there ain't no radium here. If there ever was, you couldn't find it.
Bring the detector over here, Dr. Barber. Right here, please.
Yes. Hey, I think we're getting warm. The gold leaf's drooping.
Yeah, it's cold again. That's funny. Must be around here somewhere. Put the detector down near this mound. Here.
Yeah. No, that doesn't work. Wait a minute. I believe we found the spot.
Tibbles, get those pigs out of here, will you?
Yeah, go on. Get back there. Pig. Get right here.
Cold again.
Tibbles.
Huh?
Drive those pigs back here, will you?
Say, what's the matter with you fellas?
Hurry up, man. We've got no time to lose.
Oh, sure there, pig.
Yeah, here. Put the detector up near this pig.
No. Yeah. No, let him go. It's the wrong one. Tibbles, help us out here, will you?
Yeah.
One of these pigs in.
This is the one. Got away. Tibbles, catch that pig.
Here, piggy.
There, got him, Doc. There's your pig.
That's the one, all right.
Now what are you going to do?
Why, there's $3,000 worth of radium in that pig.
Maybe so, maybe not. But this here pig's worth $14. So before you experiment any more on him, you'll have to pay me for him cash right now.
Physicist Buchta pays. And inside the pig's stomach, a butcher finds an undamaged file, 1/16 of an inch in diameter and 3/4 of an inch long, containing Moe Hospital's precious radium. Time marches on. Washington, D.C. As the United States today awaits Moscow's answer to its potent formal protest, strongest in U.S. post-war diplomacy, against communist agitation in this country, a first informal reply is given by the Soviet's U.S. Ambassador, Alexander A. Troyanovsky, to Washington correspondents.
Then, Mr. Troyanovsky, you do not consider that the United States' note of protest may have serious consequences?
Gentlemen, has not a campaign been conducted by some persons in this country against the Soviet form of government? I recall the biblical injunction. And why beholdest thou the mote in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye?
And you'd compare anti-Soviet propaganda in this country to the organized anti-American revolutionary propaganda of the Communist International?
Anything said in Moscow at the International Congress against the United States is very insignificant compared with the continuous propaganda in the United States against the Soviet Union.
Mr. Troyanovsky, are we to consider this statement of yours in any way official?
Not at all. A satisfactory reply to your government's protest will be made by my government in Moscow in due course.
From Moscow, following publication of the U.S. protest, comes news that Great Britain, Italy, and Latvia have already presented stiff oral protests against communist propaganda in their countries, organized in defiance of the Soviet solemn pledges. Then, late today, comes Russia's official answer to the United States.
The United States note contains no facts which could be regarded as violation of the Soviet government's obligations. On the other hand, it is undoubtedly nothing new to the United States government that the Soviet government cannot assume and never did assume any obligations as regards the Communist International. We cannot accept the United States protest, and we are compelled to reject it.
Time marches on. You have just listened to The March of Time, the reenactment of memorable scenes from the world's news, prepared and presented by the editors of Time.
For the third successive season, Remington Rand enjoys having a part in bringing you The March of Time. As we go on the air this year, we want, first of all, to thank the businessmen of America. Remington Rand sales are running 25% ahead of last year, 65% ahead of the low year of depression. We appreciate this testimonial from the American buying public. Chief reason for increased sales, aside from improved business generally, the helpfulness and energy of more than 2,200 Remington Rand representatives. We hope that through March of Time, you will know these Remington Rand men better. Carefully selected, their business careers have been devoted to studying methods of improving business efficiency. We rely on them to make good our objective. No sale unless the buyer can use the equipment at a profit. You know what Remington Rand makes. Office typewriters and supplies and duplicating stencils, adding, bookkeeping, and accounting machines, Powers punched card accounting, filing and record systems and supplies, together with equipment and portable typewriters. Telephone our local office for a man to advise on your particular requirement. All right, Remington Rand, Buffalo, New York. Is your child equipped with a Remington portable typewriter? Schools open next week, and educators have proved that typewriting improves spelling, composition, even arithmetic. Again tomorrow night at this time, and every night, Monday through Friday, throughout each week, the March of Time will take you to the world's news fronts.
to the sides of the great and the humble, into the midst of events significant and strange, stirring and tragic, in the pace of time's inexorable march. Time marches on. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. The March of Time. On a thousand fronts, the history of the world moves swiftly forward. A thousand new facts, new details in the world's history come into being every hour. There is one complete record of this swift-changing civilization.
It is Time, the weekly news magazine.
Time makes it possible for the busy man to read the story of his lifetime as he lives the story of his life.